श्री चैतन्य महाप्रभु की जय, श्री चैतन्य चरितमृत की जय। So we are studying a few verses today, and these verses are numerous. There's a section of verses from the sixth chapter of the Madhya Lila, the middle section of Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it is to do with the liberation of a great philosopher, king's philosopher, known as Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Can I explain something? Should I explain something? Yes. For those of you who are just joining the story, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu he's left home. He's taken sannyas. It's 1510. And he's begun his great journey to the south. He promised his mother that he wouldn't go too far away. He didn't want her to feel too much separation. And yet at the same time, he wanted to observe the codes of sannyas, because to be a sannyasi means to be respected by all members of society. And in that way, he would be able to induce the common people to his teachings. So he took sannyas, but he moved to Jagannath Puri, some 250 miles to the south. Jagannath Puri is, of course, a great place of pilgrimage on the east coast of India, home to Jagannath. And so he comes, but as he comes into the temple, he is so in ecstasy at being able to see Krishna in this particular form that he faints. And the main teacher at the temple, Sarvabhauma, comes, and at first the pandas of the temple, being the guardians of Lord Krishna in the form of Jagannath, are going to beat Lord Chaitanya. And who is this man making a show? But Sarvabhauma says, no, don't do that. And they put him on a stretcher, kind of arrangement with some bamboo, and they take him to Sarvabhauma's house. If you've ever been to Jagannath Puri, then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house is, if you're looking at the main gate of the temple, it is to the left-hand side of the gate. There is a small incline, and then down another incline, and then up a side street, and you will come to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house. It's still there. They've still preserved everything, even his sitting place and his place of study. And so he could not see any signs of life from Lord Chaitanya, so he said, let's take a very thin cotton swab, and they held it in front of his nostrils, and he saw some little breathing. So he said, well, let's wait. In the meantime, the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, who were a little bit tardy in arriving, they arrived at the main gate of the Jagannath Puri temple. And once inside, once they'd had their darshan, they were told of, or once inside the courtyard rather, they were told of a kerfuffle that had taken place that morning. Some monk had fallen and he was faint on the ground. And so they understood this perhaps might be Lord Chaitanya. And they were met by Gopinath Acharya. Now, Gopinath Acharya actually was he was the son-in-law of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And he was very delighted to see the devotees because he used to live in Nadia, in the area of Navadvip. And he was great friends with someone called Mukunda Datta. And when he saw Mukunda Datta in the assembly of devotees who had come all the way by foot from Navadvip, he was very delighted and he embraced him. And he explained to them what had happened and took them all to see Lord Chaitanya, who was still unconscious. They were a little worried, but Sarvabhauma reassured them. And then he asked his son, Chandaneshwara, to take them all to the temple and to guide them properly, give them a more of a prestigious entrance into the temple. If you go with a local guide, you get a better view and you get better darshan, and of course you may get something from the pujari. So in this case, they got a beautiful flower garland, and it was put around Lord Nityananda's neck. And of course, it was a great contrast to how Lord Chaitanya was received that morning. So then they went, and they went to Sarvabhauma's house. They were received very nicely. They had prasadam. Lord Chaitanya, first he woke up at around midday and took prasad. And the conversation continues in this chapter with conversation between the son-in-law, Gopinath Acharya, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Now, Sarvabhauma is by far the senior, and Gopinath is keen to impress on him as a, you know, young son-in-law. He's impressing upon him the actual nature of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. First of all, he explains where he's come from. And Nadia, of course, Sarvabhauma, he knows Nadia. He used to live there before. He says that, did you know that this Chaitanya, he used to be called Vishvambhar Mishra, and he's the son of Jagannath Mishra, and he's the grandson of Nilambhar Chakravarti. And Sarvabhauma replies, oh, Nilambhar Chakravarti, my father, he was his great friend. What was his name? Maheshwar Visharada. Maheshwar Visharada, my father. And so that means he's sort of family in a way. And then Gopinath responds by saying, actually, he's the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. And Sarvabhauma Dvadacharya says, well, you know, come on. He's a nice person. He's from Nadia. You know, we're sort of close because his grandfather knew my father. And we may wonder, actually, how Gopinath Acharya was so convinced. How is he so convinced? Because he'd been associating with Mukunda Datta. Mukunda Datta knew the secret inner identity of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but we'll come to that in a minute. But he says Gopinath Acharya was trying to convince Sarvabhauma. And Krishnadas Kaviraj describes that sometimes he would persuade Sarvabhauma, sometimes he would blaspheme him, ridicule him, sometimes he would philosophize with him in the way that you can only do. You can only do that if you're a family member. But Sarvabhauma responded when Gopinath persisted with his explanation of who Lord Chaitanya was. He said, well, he said, basically, take it easy. He said, don't get angry. He said, don't get angry with me. I'm just saying to you that there is no incarnation. Even if he is an incarnation, there is no incarnation for Kali Yuga. That's why Lord Vishnu is known as Tri Yuga. He comes in the, you know, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwarpa Yuga, but not in Kali Yuga. And Gopinath had to, you know, repeat a few verses of Shastra to him. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami doesn't say that, you know, Sarvabhauma's eyes glazed over because he was a person that you don't really try to convince Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya with quotations of Shastra. He knows everything. That's why he's called Sarvabhauma. But anyway, he said, anyway, don't become angry. Let's talk about it later, okay? So then now we're entering into the later portion where Sarvabhauma has a transformation of consciousness. So let us see our verses for today. We're going to have some slides, so maybe you'll be able to chant along. Oh, we're doing the last verse, are we? Let me read to you the verses up to this point. Okay, we have it. Everything is possible. Okay, we're still working on this. But that's okay. So this is the ultimate verse. We have a few verses before. So here, Krishnadas Kaviraj takes us into the sister. He put him there. They showed him how to, you know, where the water was, where the pots were. They made him comfortable. First go to that place and invite him here with his associates. Ask him on my account. In other words, tell him I asked for him to come. Prasadane tare karab agi bhiksha paschat asi amare karai shiksha. Take Jagannath Prasad and first give it to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. After that, come back here and teach me well. In other words, if you've got anything more to tell me about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, first let's bring him here and then we can continue the discussion. Let's receive him properly. Acharya, Bhagini Pati Shalaka, Bhadacharya, Ninda Stuti Hasya Shikshakarena Acharya. Gopinath Acharya was the brother-in-law, excuse me, of Sarvababha Bhadacharya. Therefore, their relationship was sweet and very intimate. Under the circumstances, Gopinath Acharya taught him by sometimes blaspheming him, sometimes praising him, and sometimes laughing at him. This had been going on for some time. So they had this relationship. So then Lord Chaitanya comes into the middle of this relationship and it continues. They keep their same relationship. Acharya Siddhante Mukunder Hoyla Santosh Bhattacharya Vakya Mane Haila Tukarosh. Srila Mukunda Datta felt very satisfied to hear the conclusive statements of Gopinath Acharya, but he became very unhappy and angry to hear the statements put forward by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Now, Krishnadas Kaviraj doesn't go into detail about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's, you know, his version, his argumentation. But it was enough to make Mukunda, who loved the Lord, sad and angry. Gosai stani acharya kaila agaman Bhattacharya name tare kari nimantran. According to the instructions of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Gopinath Acharya went to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and invited him on the Bhattacharya's behalf. The Bhattacharya's statements were discussed before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is quite something, isn't it? That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is sitting there while they have the discussion on the identity of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's a bit embarrassing. Gopinath Acharya and Mukunda Datta disapproved of the Bhattacharya's statements because they caused mental pain. It's like when we sometimes meet someone and they say, well, I believe in Krishna, but who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? He must have been a saint. And we feel a little pain because they haven't quite understood the full mercy of Krishna in appearing in the form as his own devotee. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is sitting there and he's a little embarrassed by this because they're claiming him to be the Supreme Lord in earshot of him. Shruni Mahaprabhu kai aiche mat kaha ama pratibhata charya hoi anugraha. Hearing this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, don't speak like that. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya has shown great affection and mercy toward me. Amara sanyas dharma chahina rakite vatsalya karune karena ki dosha ihate. Out of paternal affection for me, he wants to protect me and see that I follow the regulative principles of a sannyasi. What fault is there in this? There had been some suggestion, and we'll hear it in a little bit, that because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very attractive, he was young, would he actually be able to follow the principles of sannyas? Sannyas is for old men, mainly. So when a young man takes sannyas, the elders of the community, they tut-tut and shake their heads and think it will be difficult for him. So Sarvabhauma, he was a little concerned about this. The next morning, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya together visited the temple of Lord Jagannath. Both of them were in a very pleasant mood. See, because what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had said, he said, I'm a very junior sannyasi. And I'm a very junior sannyasi. And, you know, I approach you as my spiritual master. See, this is the correct attitude of someone junior to someone senior. Even though he knew that philosophically speaking, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was not sufficiently a Vaishnava to be able to act as a spiritual master. But seniority was a concern for him. So he said, you're my guru. And Sarvabhauma, on the other hand, he said, well, you're a sannyasi, you're actually my guru, so allow me to be your servant. So in this way, in mutual service. But Sarvabhauma, he'd also said something to Gopinath. I think it's either this part or, yes, part before, where he said, well, actually, his name is Krishna Chaitanya, Sri Krishna. He said, Krishna is a name for a sannyasi, but I can see from the name, because there was social, sannyasi is a social class, part of the Varnashram system. So he said that, you know, there's a hierarchy, as there always is. He said, I see that he's a second class sannyasi. And so I can arrange for him to take the ceremony again, and he can become a first class sannyasi. It wasn't casting aspersions at the quality of the person, but just saying that he's taken initiation into an order which is of a second class, the Bharati order, so I can have him elevated socially and become a top class sannyasi, give him a good start in life. And Gopinath said, don't speak like that. He said, he has no need for your class distinctions. And the inner meaning of this, of course, is that Lord Chaitanya comes in the line of Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri himself was, you know, in the same school of sannyas, but he had been elevated by his bhakti, and he even cast aspersions on all the rules and regulations that sannyasis have to follow. And very nice verses. He said, I'll read these nice verses to you. They're very nice. He wrote these verses when he considered that devotion places one higher than a sannyas. Sandhyabandhana bhadramastu bhavato bhosnana tubhyom namo bodeva pitaras chatarpana vido naham shama kshamyatam mugdam mam nigadantu nitti nupuna brantam muhur vaidika mandam bandava sanchaya jadadhyam muktadara sodara. So these were the verses that he spoke. Do we have the verse on the board? That is what it's showing? Okay. So let's do this verse. And the translation, he then began to instruct Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on Vedanta philosophy. And out of affection and devotion, he spoke to the Lord as follows. Okay. So now we have the purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Vedanta, or Brahma Sutra, Sankirtan Priya, you want to put me on live? Thank you so much. I feel I'm losing my audience. There you are. Thank you. The Vedanta, or Brahma Sutra, written by Srila Vyasadeva, is a book studied by all advanced spiritual students, especially by the sannyasis of all religious communities, Sampradaya. The sannyasis must read Vedanta Sutra to establish their final conclusions concerning Vedic knowledge. Here, of course, the Vedanta mentioned is the commentary of Shankaracharya, known as Shariraka Bhashya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya intended to convert Lord Chaitanya, who was a Vaishnava sannyasi, into a Mayavadi sannyasi. He therefore made this arrangement to instruct him in Vedanta Sutra according to the Shariraka commentary of Shankaracharya. All the sannyasis of the Shankara Sampradaya enjoy seriously studying the Vedanta Sutra. I like what Prabhupada says here. And they enjoy seriously studying. With the Sharirakabhasya commentary, it is said, Vedanta Vakyeshu Sadharamanta, one should always enjoy the studies of the Vedanta Sutra. Right? So, obviously this verse has been chosen. We're looking a little bit at the Vedanta Sutra. Of course, you will know what happens next, of course, is that Lord Chaitanya hears all these, he hears for a long time, a week, isn't it? So the idea is that you don't have to have bhakti to study Vedanta. Bhakti may be the conclusion, and when bhakti is the conclusion, you will be a bhakti Vedanta, one who has concluded that bhakti is the end of Vedanta. But if you study Vedanta, the main reason that you would do that is to become knowledgeable on the differences between matter and spirit, and have a very fixed mind on the conclusions of how to view the world. Every school of philosophy reads Vedanta, everybody, because Vedanta is, well, means two things. Veda means knowledge, anta means the end. So the end of knowledge, the Vedanta of the Vedas, is the Upanishads. And the Upanishads mean Upanishad. Come and sit closer. I will tell you something more. I'll tell you something. Come closer, I'll tell you a secret. And just, I don't want to tell everybody, but come closer. I'll tell you, but I don't want to tell him. So Upanishad, come closer and I'll tell you. So the Upanishads are known as Vedanta. And then Srila Vyasadeva wrote a series of verses taking the wisdom of the Upanishads, and he put them in the form of syllogisms or collections of arguments, really. So this book is known variously, but for us it is known as Vedanta Sutra. The Vedanta shrunk to a sutra, which means taking a vast text or numerous texts. How many Upanishads are there? Some count 13, some count 10, some count 108, and some even count 200 Upanishads, all aiming to take the reader to the point of understanding the difference between matter, spirit, and Ishvara. And of course, Vedanta Sutra is very much smaller than this. It's a book of 555 verses. And these 555 verses are composed in the form of 189 different arguments. And when I say argument, I mean they take the following form. There are statements and counter-statements and refutations of the statements. There are doubts. They go in the following form. The opening statement is called a Vishaya. So there's 189 Vishayas, meaning that you, an opening statement, this is the truth. Vishaya is followed by a, what's known as a Purvapaksha. Purvapaksha is kind of a statement that says, well, I'm not too sure about that. So first comes, this is the truth. Then the statement comes, well, I'm not too sure about this. What about that? I have a doubt. You say that, but I have my doubts. So that's another statement. Then comes the Siddhanta, which is a conclusive truth. No. Because this, because that, therefore, I say to you, this is the conclusive truth. This may be your doubt, but let me refute your doubt by saying this. That's the Siddhanta. So that's the conclusion. And then after that, what comes is something called a Sanghati, which means a series of statements which confirm the Siddhanta. And these are five different ways that you can confirm the Siddhanta in the Samgati, for instance. And we know them. We do them as devotees. We have to demonstrate a consistency between the Siddhanta and scripture. For instance, you have to be able to prove from quoting from verses elsewhere in the Vedas that the Siddhanta or conclusive truth that you've given is actually true. And this is called Utpatti Samgati. So you give this. Then there is something called just standard Akshepa. Akshepa means, objections, dealing with objections and then dealing with objections. I say this is a conclusive truth. Now, you may say this, that, and the other. Well, but I say the other, that, and this. I say this. And Shastra, I think you find that Shastra says this. And then we go into a statement which is where Srila Prabhupada would just say something like this. He would say, just like you have a man driving a car. He is not the car, but he's the driver of the car. Therefore, there is a difference between the car and the driver. It's a just-like statement or illustrative example. And this is called the drishtanta. Drishtanta means that you can show someone, drishta, they can see it with their eyes. You create a word picture for them. So they, with their eyes, they can see. And this is another way of getting a person to understand the truth that you're speaking. So this is the other part of Vedanta Sutra. Now, in our understanding, Vedanta Sutra, it begins with the words Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Atato Brahma Jigyasa means Atato means now. Can mean this moment or in this human form of life, or now that you've understood everything else in the Vedas, now's the time. So the Upanishads, they do a great deal of teaching to the reader to give the reader a sense of urgency. One Upanishad says, how does it go? It goes, Jagrato. Now I forget. Jagrato. Someone help me out. No, you can't help me. online. Shirasya dara nishita duratyaya. That life is like a razor blade going across the face. At any moment, it is so sharp. You may cut yourself. Be very careful. Atishta jagrata. Prapya virane bodhata. Wake up. Now is the time you should do this. Be very careful. Be very careful, but wake up. Utishta tishta jagrata. Wake up from your sleep. This human life is meant for self-realization, but be careful. Do not cut yourself. So the Upanishads are full of this sort of urgency. There's an emergency going on. You have a very short human form of life, whereas the rest of the Vedas, they're sort of, may you live long and prosper. may you have a long life. May you have a wonderful wife and children. And may, by performing good deeds, may you go to the heavenly worlds after this life. May you always be happy, as full of blessing and full of giving you courage, that by religious activity and religious activity alone, you can come to a heavenly life in the hereafter and enjoy unlimited fruits of your good deeds. And when we get to the Upanishads, we find a rather, a critical response to all of that. And it's strange that what we call the Vedas begins with cushioning you and making you feel very comfortable about doing any religion at all. In other words, if you fast on this one day, you'll get unlimited blessings of heaven. If you give an apple to a holy man, 21 generations of your family will be it's very rewarding. There's a lot of immediate rewards for doing a good deed, any good deed, a small good deed. That's the beginning of the Vedas. At the end of the Vedas, what are you doing? What are you doing? You have to wake up. Even the Upanishads talk about the rest of the Vedas and those who follow them as Devanam Priya. Devanam Priya, those who are beloved of the gods. And it's an insult. To call someone Devanam Priya, beloved of the demigods, is actually an insult. So Vedanta is the starting point of a new way of looking at the reality of the world, bringing us closer to the truth. So it's a prerequisite for every sannyasi to study this book and to be able to teach it to others, firstly for his own purification, and then to teach it to his own followers, and to teach it to the world. And using illustrative examples from the, drishtanta to help everybody, the common people, understand these things. So we hear this conversation. It's going to be a week-long conversation. We won't talk about it now. But Sarvabhauma gives one version. He gives what's called the Shariraka Bhashya. So Vedanta Sutra is also known as the Brahma Sutra, and it's also known as the Shariraka. And Shankaracharya's commentary is known as the commentary of Shariraka, or Shariraka Bhashya. And this is what Lord Chaitanya is going to be listening to with open ears for a week. And at the end, he's going to say, Sarvabhauma says to him, I've been speaking for a week. Have you not understood what I'm saying? Or do you find any, have you understood it? You haven't asked me any questions. And Lord Chaitanya responds to him, well, I've been listening very carefully, but I just don't agree with your commentary. And Sarvabhauma becomes very disturbed. And he says, well, okay, well, tell me what your version is. And there we leave the conversation. And I think have we come to the end? 5 more minutes. Okay, good. So the thing that Lord Chaitanya will tell us through the words of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, 3 chapters ahead of this, is he will say to his followers, Atta eva, Bhagavata sutrera, Artha rupa, Nija krita sutrera, Nija bhashya swarupa. Very nice verse. In the 25th chapter, 142nd verse of the Madhyalila, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Purana, gives the meaning of the Vedanta Sutra. The author of the Vedanta Sutra is Srila Vyasadeva, and he has explained these aphorisms, in other words, the 555 or the 189 aphorisms, he's explained them in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course, Srimad Bhagavatam we refer to as the crest jewel. It is the jewel, the top of the crown of Vedic literature. It is the, ripened fruit, the fully ripened fruit at the top of the tree of wisdom. The speakers even refer to the Srimad Bhagavatam as being the king of all fruits, the mango. But there is no skin on this mango, and there is no stone. There's nothing in the Srimad Bhagavatam that will be thrown away. If you eat a mango, even the juiciest mango at the top of the tree, you will throw away the skin, unless you're crazy or if you're a goat. And you'll throw away the stone unless you're a madman. But the mango of the Srimad Bhagavatam at the top of the tree, the king of fruits of the wisdom tree, it has no skin and it has no stone. Now you may say, well, Kripa Moya, I've never seen a mango without a skin or a stone. Well, then you haven't seen Srimad Bhagavatam at the top of the wisdom tree of the Vedas. But then Krishnadas Kaviraj goes on even more, as if it could get more than Srimad. How can you get more than Srimad Bhagavatam? Well, he says, well, when Srimad Bhagavatam is the best of all best verses is taken and put in the form of Jiva Goswami's Shat Sandarbha, the 6 collections of verses, describing all the aspects of truth that one needs, the soul, the Paramatma, the Supreme Ishvara, Bhakti, and the results of Bhakti. When you have all these verses from Srimad Bhagavatam in these six collections, these Shat Sandarbha, he said, then you have the juice of the fruit at the top of the wisdom tree. And therefore, he says, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, in the end of the book, in the fourth chapter of the Antilila, verse 229, he says that Jiva Goswami, when he wrote the Satsandarbha, he said, this is the essence of all scriptures. And it's this essence of all scriptures that comes in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, because that's where Jiva Goswami gets his guidance to choose different Bhagavatam verses that will illuminate the teachings of Chaitanya, directly based on Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's this that comes down to us in the form of the condensed mango, if you like, the Dashamula Shiksha of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which is then made into a beautiful, smooth mango lassi for us in the teachings of the School of Bhakti. So if you want mango lassi, you go to the School of Bhakti. All right. If there's any one question or comment, then please do fire it away. We are trying out this system. It's quite a new system for Bhaktivinoda Manor to do this with so many people online. But wherever you are, I thank you for coming in and listening. There are many other things that you could do with your Sunday morning, but you have chosen to come to this class. So I thank you very much, and I hope we've enjoyed studying the Vedanta Sutra together. All right. So then I look in the chat, and I say, yes, thank you, Paola. I will make your comment, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Kripa Maya Prabhu, for a wonderful, wonderful class. Taking us back with to Chaitanya Charitamrita, with Lord Chaitanya has been visiting Jagannath Puri, and therefore also finding these amazing personalities to associate with. One question I did have, we're getting a comment also from Nuala saying she enjoyed the class very much. Thank you. Padma Mochana also saying thank you. I did have one question.
Yes.
In regards to the exact symptoms that are been sort of almost misread by many, many devotees that have been gathered there of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How do they actually understand the behavior? And how do we then also understand how certain individuals, when they're practicing the bhakti, they may be feeling the symptoms themselves, they may not be showing it because they don't even realize. How do we come to understand that whether these are genuine symptoms or they're just making it up?
Yeah, for every symptom of bhakti, there's usually a corollary symptom which is sort of supporting the primary emotion. In the case of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, people misunderstanding his symptoms, and what your question is about understanding our symptoms, if we fall unconscious, is that bhakti or is it... So the interesting thing is that we didn't really talk about Mukunda Dutta. It was Mukunda Dutta who really gave the conviction to Gopinath Acharya that you should understand the symptoms of Lord Chaitanya like this, and that ultimately those symptoms can only be understood by grace. And this is the thing. You see, Mukunda Dutta was actually born in a village called Chanhara, which is only 20 miles from Pundarik Vidyanidhi, who was a great devotee, but outwardly manifest as an enjoying householder. But Mukunda was, he was very persuasive. He managed to get Gadadhar Pandit, who appears in the Panchatattva, our Panchatattva image, Lord Gadadhar Pandit is standing on the right of Lord Chaitanya as we look at him. And so he was very reluctant to go and see Pundarik Vidyanidhi. But his symptoms were outwardly, his symptoms were that he was sitting on a silk cushion, being fanned by an attendant, and wearing a beautiful clothing, a big rich house. And Gadara said to Mukunda, when they were looking in the window, he said, well, I don't really think this person can help me in my spiritual life. And he said, well, and then Mukunda, who was a great singer, he was a heavenly singer, actually, from Vrindavan, who had taken birth in Lord Chaitanya's Leela, along with his brother, Vasudev. And they used to sing for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But even, anyway, at this time, he sang a few verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam, and immediately Pundarik fell off his chair and began to manifest symptoms of bhava. So Mukundita turns to Gadadhar and he said, you see, don't be deceived by the external symptoms, but judge by the symptoms when a person is placed in kirtan. So then, all right, how do we know? Because we have different, it has become the practice in that part of the world to manifest as if in the mood of an actor, these symptoms of bhava. I can make myself cry. I can make myself fall unconscious. And Prabhupada tells us to be very cautious about people who seem to be manifesting symptoms like this. And so what is the Prabhupada said at one time? He said, how do you tell whether someone's symptoms of falling unconscious in kirtan are genuine or not? And Prabhupada just looked at this disciple and he said, you go and you kick him. And then they looked at Prabhupada and said, well, we kick him in the temple, Prabhupada? He said, yes. He said, if he's in bhava, he won't feel anything. If he's an imposter, which I think he is, then he will complain. So Prabhupada often said, there are so many imposters, so many sahajya who take these symptoms not very seriously. And at the end of the falling on the ground unconscious, they smoke a cigarette, a cheap Indian cigarette called the bidi, he said, and then they eat fish. He said, if you see this, then you know that they're an imposter. He said, hardly there's one person. So then there was one person that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was introduced to, and he said he'd understood his symptoms were there of bhava. He said, he wanted to ask him a test question. He said, who are you in relationship with? Are you in relationship with Krishna directly? Or are you in relationship to the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna? One of the attendants of the manjaris who serve the gopis. He said, oh no. He said, I'm in attendance to Krishna directly. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, then you're an imposter. And he just turned around and walked out. So a true devotee who has a so-called ecstatic symptom will be a dedicated servant of the servant of the servant of the guru. And that is how to test. If there's no humility there, then you've not found a person whose emotional symptoms are genuine. But we see in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, not only was he following his own, because he hadn't written these verses yet, he hadn't written the Shikshastaka yet, that came later. But his maxim was that a devotee, a true devotee, should be more humble than the straw on the street. Humble, more humble than, what can be lower than the straw on the street? A piece of straw that anybody stands on. So even though Sarvabhauma was going to teach him Mayavad philosophy, a philosophy, by the way, that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, it is better to be in a cage, to be trapped in a cage surrounded by fire and burned to death, than it is to hear the philosophy of Shankaracharya. It is better to be in a pool of water which is filled with crocodiles, than it is to listen to the philosophy of the Shariraka Bhasha. But here he was. He was placing himself as the servant of Sarvabhauma at great risk. He didn't want to do it. But he knew that to conquer Mayavadis, even as a sannyasi, he could only conquer them by his affection, brilliance, humility. And he did it again, of course, when he went to Varanasi. He sat in the place where he'd washed his feet. He didn't even enter the assembly of the learned followers of Prakashananda Saraswati. But from that lowly position on the floor, he manifested such a brilliance of personal bodily effulgence that they all looked at him and they said, please come, please join us. And this is one of the symptoms of a person who's a great pundit, and not a pundit, but a true pundit, a true one who has really learned of his relationship with Krishna, that there are some symptoms even before the manifestation of emotion. There will be humility, pridelessness, there'll be knowledge, there'll be effulgence, they'll be happy. So see whether they're happy with nothing before they manifest ecstatic symptoms in a big temple or in a big kirtan, because these symptoms come privately before they become public. A person who manifests such symptoms publicly is a person who cannot control those symptoms. But if you cannot manifest anything in private to one or two people, then that shows that you're reserving your symptoms for public approval. Is that okay? But these are real. These are real. We should not, therefore, when we have a symptom of Krishna consciousness, it is said that, what is that song? It says that Lord Nityananda reserves all his blessings for a person who just once has one tear in the eye uttering the name of Lord Chaitanya. If just once, one tear, that one time you said the name of Chaitanya Nitai, or Chaitanya Nimai, then he reserves all blessings for that person. So we should not think that, well, I had a kirtan once, but you know, maybe that was just my mind, maybe that was just my imagination, maybe it was just some sentiment, maybe it was. But don't artificially deprecate yourself, because you may have experienced something, and whatever you were doing at that time to experience that something, please do it again. keep on doing it, because we want to experience genuine emotion. Otherwise, how can we carry on in our life as devotees? How can you carry on as a devotee if you don't experience a transformation of consciousness? Ritualistically chanting, ritualistically reading, ritualistically serving, mechanically serving, going through the motions of being a devotee of Krishna. You won't be able to do that for very long. So immediately, we have to, as soon as possible, come up to a level where we experience something that will take you forward to the next level. Well, how do I do that? Well, you do it by plunging into this beautiful swimming pool of bhakti. If you chant, chant more. If you read, read more. If you've given up something in order to do bhakti, give up more. You will experience more. It's directly reciprocal. You give more, you will receive more. Because ultimately, Mukunda Datta, he convinces Gopinath Acharya that everything about Lord Chaitanya can be understood only by grace. So then we may say, well, do I have to understand and believe before I understand? Do I have to, you know, which comes first? So we keep the identity of Lord Chaitanya artificially at a distance, waiting for the time when we're philosophically convinced. But the identity of Lord Chaitanya isn't given to us by philosophical conviction. It comes by grace, through service, and acting as if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is who he is spoken about. Acting as if, we will get the grace to understand his position. And so Mukunda, he's fully convinced. He's sung for Lord Chaitanya in many different situations. He sings to Lord Chaitanya for the kirtan. he opens up the kirtan in the great Mahaprahara, the great 21-hour kirtan at Shiva Sangam. Mukunda is the one who sings first when Lord Chaitanya is taking sannyas. Very distressing to see him shave his head, but Mukunda is there singing all the way through. So Mukunda is a very key element in this story because he's the one who, he really convinces Gopinath Acharya, and Gopinath Acharya convinces, well, he doesn't quite convince Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, but he's in the family, and that's for a reason. So the liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya leads us on to many other personalities. He was a very influential person in those days. He's mentioned in the history books. Many other of these devotees that you read will not be mentioned in any other history book apart from the Gaudiya Vaishnava history books. But Sarvabhauma, he's a great pundit who's, you know, he's mentioned in the history books of the time. So he's not an ordinary person.
Thank you so much for an amazing class.